There's a very amazing, beautiful idea that we haven't discussed specifically before, which people often talk about but often not understood. And you see out of these parshas that we're reading now, last week, this week, you see a very interesting thing, and that is the connection between the sin of the golden calf, the building of the Mishkan, exact opposite end, and the role that women played in these things, and the gifts that women were given as a result of this. You know that there's a special idea, I'm sure most of you are aware, certainly should be, that the special day of a woman is Rosh Chodesh. Do you know that? The special Yom Tov of a woman is the beginning of a month. Although it's not a day that's forbidden to do work, like Shabbos or another Yom Tov, although many women have a custom not to do certain things on Rosh Chodesh, but nevertheless it's a gift, special time that's given to women. There are many depths to this Kabbalistically, also what a woman's physical time cycle is and how that goes according to the month and according to the moon. Very, very amazing. In fact, in the halachic writings, not even Kabbalistic, in the halachic writings that discuss the natural menstrual cycle, the way a woman's body functions, in the halachic writings there's even a discussion, amazing thing, of how a woman's body sometimes responds to the phases of the moon, even more than you'd think, because we know that the only thing that triggers that physiological cycle in a woman's body is something to do with the moon, because science has not discovered anything else that makes it function. There's nothing, it's got nothing to do with seasons or day and night or anything else. But sometimes it's so amazing. Today we are much weaker than we used to be. Women are not as regular as they used to be. In many sources it says that in the days of the Gemara, women were so regular, they would know that their cycle would be to the hour, or even more, even to the minute sometimes. So that's unusual for a woman to find that she's regular even 3 months in a row. But there was a kind of a cycle, there are different kinds of cycles. Sometimes it's always the first of the month, or the same date in the month. Right? That means there's a kind of a cycle that a woman's body can have, unbelievable tuning, that the Gemara recognizes a cycle that some women's bodies are regular to the same day in the Hebrew month. Which means that whether the month's got more days or less days makes no difference. Her body knows which day of the month it is. If it's the first of Nisan, it'll be the first of Iyar, it'll be the first of Sivan, even though there'll be different days in between. But her body will know exactly which day of the month it is. In other words, the way the moon's going, exactly how she'll respond. Amazing thing. Now, there are many ideas that are connected to what the phases of the moon are and what it means. Newness when the moon is just beginning and what it means to be a being who is able to hide away like the moon does as opposed to the sun. Many ideas like that. But on a more revealed level, there's a very wonderful idea that's true as well as all the depth. Also, all these ideas are true. But on the more revealed level, there's a most beautiful idea that, if we could understand this idea, would be a very wonderful way of beginning to work on our personalities, that is connected with why women were given Rosh Chodesh as a special day. I mean, most people know about it, but very few people know how did it come about that that's a special day for a woman. Rabbi Amenah from Gateshead has a very beautiful explanation along the following lines. You know that not only is it a day that's given to women, first let's see if we can understand the background of what happened and how it became that way. Let's see if we can apply that to what it means to have to work on oneself and what a person could achieve through knowing this thing. Do you know that not only was it given to women, but it was taken away from men? Do you know that? It was a gift that women received that was meant to be given to men. It says that the different Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, those three Yomim Tovim, were given to the Jewish people because of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The great forefathers that we had, they merited, because of their merit, so we had those Yomim Tovim. The 12 months, the beginning of each month, the 12 cycles, the beginning of each month, were meant to be given to the Jewish people because of the merit of the 12 tribes. That's what it's supposed to be. Because of the great men of the tribes, each of the 12, so each month was to be dedicated, but because the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf, they lost that merit, and it was taken away and given to women. That's what it says. Why was it given to women? So let's examine. If you think about it, you'll remember that when it came to the sin of the golden calf, the women did not participate. Remember that? And it says it was a reward for that. Because the women, the men were all heated up about it, and they wanted to participate in the sin, and they wanted to build this calf, and there's a very terrible incident, maybe the worst in our history, maybe, that happened. The men were very keen to do this thing. They had motivations, they thought they were justified, rationalized, etc. But nevertheless, it was a terrible sin. And in fact, the Chazal say that it was much worse than that. It wasn't only idolatry. In fact, it says in Chazal that the Jewish people never worshipped idolatry except as a license to permit themselves immorality. Actually, the underlying motivation for trying to break off the yoke of Hashem's rule is actually so you can commit immorality without any conscience. Because it says that after they did the golden calf, they all got up and they began to behave immorally in a sensual way. They became immoral, and that's what happened. And the Chazal say that it's the only reason that they committed idolatry was so that they could then feel that they didn't have any divine sort of control, and then they could behave immorally, which means the real motivation underlying it was that it means that the men were motivated, even though they might not even have been quite aware of it at the time, but their motivations were very low, they were very base, with all that going on, the idolatrous thing or the immorality thing, and they contributed their gold to the golden calf, and this calf was created, it was made, and it came out alive. I'm sure you remember the magicians of the Egyptians who were with them, the Arab rub, they put in their different stories about the different dimensions, how it happened, but it came out living. This golden calf came out alive, and it had a tremendous effect, and the sin was done. But the women refused to participate. They weren't strong enough to stop the men. They just physically weren't strong enough to stop them, but they refused to participate. The men tried to take the women's gold, and the women wouldn't give it. Their earrings and their jewelry, the women wouldn't give it. And the men took their own. I think it says in some places they even tore off the jewelry from the women and forced them to give. But the women refused to participate. Now it says that because of that merit, because the women resisted the temptation, and despite all the persuasion of their husbands, and despite how fired up their husbands were, they realized what was right and what was wrong, and they stood their ground and they didn't participate. By the way, Jewish history is replete with the greatness of women, as we try to emphasize here many times, much greater in terms of personality strength than the husbands. Of course, it works both ways. You remember that the original sin was because Eve, Chava, the female part of that human combination, was overcome by a certain desire that she saw in the fruit. So you have to understand which dimensions. But the point is that since then, basically, Jewish women have been holding the fort. Basically, you can't rely on men. And the final redemption, as we've mentioned before, certainly will require that women have the strength to teach men what's needed. Now the question is this: because they avoided the sin of the golden calf, why did they get Rosh Chodesh? What's the connection? It didn't happen on Rosh Chodesh. What happened on Rosh Chodesh was that the Mishkan was built, the sanctuary, the Mishkan in the desert, for which people also had to give all their possessions, had to give their gold, had to give their jewelry. The Mishkan was built, and that was erected finally on Rosh Chodesh. Actually, there were 7 days during which Moshe Rabbeinu erected it, and each day, I think it says in Chazal, it fell down. There were 7 days preceding Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first of Nisan. Every day he erected it, and it collapsed. And on the seventh, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, seventh or eighth day, what happened was it actually was erected, it was Rosh Chodesh, and it stayed, and the people rejoiced tremendously, and that was the Mishkan. Inside was the golden Aura in the golden Kruvim, and from there Hashem spoke to us. It was a very great day. So now, one second, what's the golden calf that was the women's greatness? Why did they get rewarded with Rosh Chodesh as a Yom Tov, as a holiday, when what happened actually was something else? So Chazal explained like this. What the women did actually was twofold. It's a very amazing thing to follow. What the women did was twofold. The women refused to give their gold for the golden calf. But when it came to the Mishkan, they gave. You hear? There was a twofold issue here. There were two occasions on which things were demanded. Their own private possessions, their jewelry, which of great beauty, which is things that they valued. In fact, it's a very intimate and integral part of a woman's appearance, is jewelry. I don't know if you're aware of that. I don't know, husbands are going to be too happy with me, but it says that when a husband owes his wife in the marriage contract, you owe a wife certain things. Among, under the category of clothing, is jewelry. Jewelry and cosmetics if necessary, and incense oils and things that make you look nice, smell nice, all those things are part of the marriage contract. I shouldn't be recording this maybe, but anyway. And in fact, the point is that it's a very important thing to a woman, and they gave those things away. So Chazal feel over here a very interesting thing. You see that there were two occasions when demands were made for personal, for gold, for jewelry. When it came to the golden calf, the women refused. And when it came to the Mishkan, which was Avodas Hashem, which was the right thing to do, they willingly gave it away. So it seems that they were given, and the Mishkan was finalized, was finally erected on Rosh Chodesh. We'll get to that later. But the point is, it seems that there were two issues, two things that had to happen before they achieved this merit. Let's compare this. Let's understand this a bit further. What's so special about not giving in one place and giving in another place? What happened to the men? What happened to the men? Did the men give for the Mishkan? Oh, they certainly did. When it came to having to give for the Mishkan, to build the sanctuary, to build it, the men gave. There's no question about it. They gave tremendously. In fact, they gave so much that Moshe Rabbeinu had to stop them. they contributed so much for the building of the Mishkan that they had to send out a message around the camp that there was too much and everybody should stop now. So what happened was this: the men gave freely, there's no question about it, but when it came to the golden calf, they gave also. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu castigated them later and criticized them and said, you people are so fickle, you don't know how to distinguish between when it comes to, you ask to give a thing, so without any making any critical judgments, you'll just give. If it's a golden calf, you give for that. If it's a Mishkan, you'll give for that. And it's a criticism. What's the criticism that you got? So they're generous, what's the problem? So they go, so they made a mistake. Why are the two things linked? Can you begin to feel the problem? Why are the two things linked? You have two opportunities to give. One you should and one you shouldn't. Why does the Torah always judge them back to back? That's the problem. Take the fact that they gave to the Mishkan. That's very good. Don't criticize them for that. Why bring into the criticism? Can you hear that? Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes the men of the Jewish people. And he says, you know, you people are, you're very lowly. Why are you lowly? Because when it comes to giving, you give. You give for the Mishkan, you give for the golden calf. That doesn't make sense. What he should have said was, you gave to the golden calf. That you shouldn't have done. Giving to the Mishkan is good. Why does he lump them both into a criticism? By the way, you should know that despite that, even there it says that the women gave more. You know that? When it came to the Mishkan, the women who refused to give, they held back and they hadn't given for the golden calf. When it came to the Mishkan, they gave more. Because it says that Vayavoyu ha'anoshim al hanoshim, that the men came in addition to the women and they gave. So from that Chazal learned that the women were the ones who mainly gave. The men gave tremendously and there was more than enough, but it was in addition to the women. The women took the lead and they gave more selflessly and they gave even more to the Mishkan than the men did. Now, we have to understand this. What are these two events that go together that are judged one against the other? You see another example of this which maybe opens it up a little bit. You know, there was a man called Pinchas. Do you remember? Pinchas was a man who was not a Kohen, but he was so zealous for Hashem's honor, he did such a fearsome act in killing Cosby and Zimri to avenge Hashem's honor, that he was awarded, he was made for all generations to be included in the Kohuna. He was given the gift of Hashem's special covenant to become a Kohen. Who was Pinchas and what did he do? Again, fascinating issue where the Torah puts two things together, the Gemara puts two things together, which don't seem to have anything to do with each other. Contrary, they seem to be opposites, and you can't judge the one without the other. It says this, that when Pinchas killed him, what happened was Cosby and Zimri, a leader of the Jewish people, Zimri, a prince of Shimon, an aristocratic leader of one of the tribes of Israel, committed a sin with a non-Jewish woman. He had a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, and at that time when Pinchas saw this happening, he went into the tent where they were and he killed them both. He killed them with his spear and he carried them around the camp to show the people what he'd done. He killed them without a beis din, without a trial. And from that the Gemara learns that the sin of a relationship with a non-Jew is such an odious thing. We've discussed this in other, I think we've talked about in other times, why this generation has fallen down in that issue. What's the difference between the previous generation, our parents, grandparents, and why our youth don't have that sensitivity anymore. It's another issue. The point is that at root, at heart, it is it makes the Jewish stomach turn. Nothing wrong with non-Jews here. That's not the wavelength we're talking about. But for us to relate to them in that way is like two things being put together that can't be put together. When he saw that, he was so inflamed, he was so incensed, that he went up to Moshe and he said, Moshe, didn't you teach us that kanoim poiginboy, that extremists, zealots, who are very jealous and zealous for Hashem's honor, they can take action in such a situation without even recourse to Beis Din. So Moshe didn't want to say, didn't want to tell him. He said, but let the one who brings the letter read it. That's what he said. Let the one who brings the letter, delivers the letter, let him read it. So in that Pinchas understood that if he had brought it, he was to do it. And he went in and he killed them and he saved the Jewish people from a terrible plague and he regained Hashem's honor and he saved the situation, saved the day. Now because of that act of seeming brutality, of having to kill people in that way, he was awarded the gift of Kavuna. The gift of tremendous, amazing spiritual status that he and his generations, all that came out of him, would be Kohanim. But the Gemara says a very amazing thing. The Gemara says, when was it given to him? It wasn't given to him then. It was given many, many, a long time later. When the Jews had already moved into Israel, and you remember they left 2.5 tribes on the other side of the Jordan. Do you remember 2.5 tribes settled on one side of the Jordan? And the others, and they went in with the Jews and they conquered the land, the whole people together. And then when the land was all divided, they came back to the inheritance. They settled on the east bank of the Jordan. The others settled inside Eretz Israel. And at that time, after Moshe Rabbeinu's death, when Joshua was apportioning the land, it said that the tribes there, they set up a mizbeach. They set up an altar over there. That's where they lived and they set up there. And it was a terrible, tremendous outcry among the Jewish people that they were splitting away and they were building an altar where it wasn't allowed. And the rest of the Jewish people wanted to take arms against them in a civil war. A lethal and terrible, terrible civil war was about to break out. Who saved the day? Pinchas. Figures arrived that he analyzed the whole situation, and he worked out that the people weren't doing it out of any negative motivation. They genuinely were doing it out of desire to serve Hashem, and he used that, and he made peace between the whole Jewish people, and he averted a war. What happened? So then the Gemara says that's when he inherited the reward of being made a Kohen at that time. Now what's going on? The Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says that when he killed Cosby and Zimri, he did that terrible act of vengeance, that's when he was given the covenant. But the Gemara says, but it only took effect in much, much later when he made peace in the Jewish people. What's the one got to do with the other? On the contrary, they're two opposites. One is being zealous and jealous and brutal where you have to be, and the other one is making peace. Why is the one linked to the other? Can somebody pass me a siddur? There's a siddur there. So there's a place in Pirkei Avos that puts it like this. It's a very beautiful thing to understand. In fact, it's, if you think about it, it's just plain common sense. If you just puts it like this. The principle that underlies this problem, there's one spiritual principle that underlies it. When you see it, you see how obvious it is. And it's as follows. Listen to this. Amazing Mishnah. It's in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos. You can go over it yourself. Fifth chapter, and it's the 14th Mishnah. You tell it. It says like this. Arba midos b'dayos. There are four kinds of personality. Listen to this. There are four kinds of human personality. Noyach lichois v'noyach lirtois. There's a person who is easy to get angry and easy to be appeased. This person is what you call in English volatile. He gets easily angry. Anything inflames him. You can turn him on and drive him, you know, to anger easily. And he's easily appeased. He forgets it immediately. Half an hour later, he can't remember that there was a problem. That's why. Then there's another one, which is kasha lichos v'kasha lirtois. So it's opposite. This person is what they call phlegmatic, very slow to respond. Hard to get angry, takes hours or ages, days of doing the same, of niggling this person to get him angry. But when you get him angry, you'll feel like that for months. Huh? You can't settle him down. Once he's boiled up and cooked up, and once you can't settle him down. Huh? That's a second. And then, of course, there's two others. There's kasha lichos v'neach lirtois. There's a person who's very hard to get angry, but very easy to appease. And then you have there's a person who's very easy to get angry. Right? It happens that this is the worst kind. Don't marry one of these. This is the kind of person you get angry in no provocation. And once he's angry, he'll stay like that for months. That's the kind not to marry. But anyway, if you did already, I don't speak to me privately. But anyway, the point is, that's a fallacy that all men are in this category. It just seems that way. But anyway, the point is that those are the four types. Those are the four kinds of personality. Logical, right? With regard to being volatile or to being slow to respond, there are four kinds of personality. Now, what is the judgment that the Mishnah makes of these four kinds? Listen, very interesting. Listen to them. Let's start again. Abba Midas Badeos, there are four kinds of personality. Neach Lichos, somebody who is easy to get angry, but Neach Lichos, and it's easy to be appeased. What's the judgment? Yotzot Tcharei Behefsedei. This person's benefit is lost in his loss. In other words, what he gains in one, he loses. You follow? Since this person is easy to appease, that's a big plus in his personality, because he's calmed down easily and forgive and forget. But on the other hand, he boils up again easily. So this kind of personality doesn't gain, he doesn't lose. What he gains in one, he loses in the other. But fair enough. The second one, kasha lichos v'kasha lirtois. Somebody who is very hard to get angry, but then he's hard to appease. Yotzot Tcharei Behefsedei. He loses in one what he gains in the other. Exactly the opposite, right? Since he's very hard to get, this person is hard to make him angry, that's a wonderful characteristic. On the other hand, you suffer from the fact that when he's angry, you can't calm him down. So therefore, he loses in one what he gains on the other. Fair enough. Listen to the next two. Kasha lichos v'neach lirtois. If a person is very hard to get angry, and he's very easy to appease, imagine that. This person, you can't get him angry for anything. And if occasionally he gets a bit angry, he forgets it immediately. Chassid, the righteous individual. A chassid is even more than what you have to be. It's like a tremendously righteous individual. Makes sense, right? Noach lichos v'kasha lirtois, and if the person is, his natural personality is such that he is easy to make angry and very hard to appease, Rasha, he's an evil person. That's terrible. Now the question to ask on this is as follows. Makes sense, right? Fits. The question to ask is this. We never have a case in Torah where somebody's natural personality is ascribed to their being. We never call a person a tzaddik or a chassid or a rasha according to their natural personality. We're talking here about natural personality. This person is naturally volatile. He gets angry easily, right? He gets motivated easily. He's hard to calm down. These are natural traits in your personality. We never call a person a wicked or righteous according to their... The question is, what do you do with it? You follow? If a person's naturally volatile, that's not good or bad. We would never label a person, it's completely against Torah, to label a person righteous or not right. What you're born with in your natural personality, how you respond, what kind of a bubbling temperament you have or slow temperament you have, that's not righteous or not. The question is, how do you apply that in the world? Here's a Mishnah talking about a person who's got certain natural personality traits and it calls him wicked or righteous. So the Rabbi must explain as follows. It's not like that at all. Listen carefully, you'll see it's most beautiful. Listen carefully. Listen to these four types again. The person who's very easy, the person's very volatile, who responds easily, gets angry easily and it's easy to calm down. It doesn't say if he's righteous or not. It just says that he loses what he gains. You follow? And the one who's very slow to respond, he gets angry slowly, and when he's angry, it's hard to calm him down. The person is very slow to respond, that person, to make a change in his personality or his mood. So he loses what he gains. He gains what he loses. The Torah doesn't say, the Mishnah doesn't say that he's righteous or not. You follow? In fact, it treats the person as we would expect. It doesn't put a judgment on him whether he's right. This is the person's personality. Now we'll see what he does, what effort he makes to control it. Then we'll call him righteous or not. But are we together? The fact that he has a natural personality trait that is defined either as quick to respond or slow to respond doesn't make a person righteous. It's just a neutral phenomenon. You lose on one side and you'll gain on another side. But here it comes. A person who is hard to get angry and easy to appease, you know why it's a chassid? Because that's not natural. The natural way a person functions is that if you're volatile, if you're quick to make changes, you'll be quick in any direction. A person who is hard to get angry, right? It's hard to change him in that way. But when he's angry, he's easy to appease. That person must have worked on himself. That's not natural. Do you follow? It's not natural. If you're quick to respond in one thing, the natural midah, the natural trait, to be quick to respond in everything. It's like that. A person is quick to respond, so that person will get angry easily, but he'll jump to save a life quickly. Right? It's a very good thing. It's a bad thing. It's a good thing. A person is very slow. They have to check a thing 1,000 times before they finally get a little bit emotional. So that person won't get angry. They'll think about it as a buddy. When something needs to be done, you won't be able to motivate them to get, because that's their natural trait. It runs through their personality. Anybody who knows people knows this. So if you find a person with two opposites, you know why it's righteous, this individual? Because it's not natural. It means that despite having the ability, you follow, despite having the natural temperament, that the person is hard to anger, which means that he's hard to change, but yet he's made himself, obviously he's worked on himself to change his characteristic, that when it comes to calming down, he puts his self-control in. That's called a chassid. And vice versa, a person who is very easy to anger, yes, that means he responds immediately. But when he's angry, it doesn't suit him to respond immediately to calm down. That person is that exact opposite. He's taken a naturally good characteristic and he must have made it terrible. So, are we together? In other words, what you see from this mission is this, that what the Torah labels righteous or not is not what your natural personality is. Let's see what your natural personality is. You've got that characteristic, good. Now that's you. Now let's see how you function elsewhere. If you function elsewhere according to that, that means you haven't yet worked on yourself. You're evincing now your natural characteristics. So then we can't call you righteous otherwise. You're just being who you are. You haven't started to work on yourself. So you'll lose and you'll gain. You follow? And if you've got another characteristic, let's see where we can identify it. Now let's see if you function like that across the board. So you're a person who hasn't worked on himself, so you'll gain some and you'll win some and you'll lose some. But if we can see from one aspect of your personality that that's who you are, and then we see you go around controlling that, we see that where necessary you act the opposite, that somebody's really working on it. Make sure you work on it the right way. Make sure you take the good one. Now then you let that emphasize itself and you control the bad one. But if you're doing that, that is a righteous individual. That's the core of what it means to be righteous. That you're actually controlling something natural. Let's get back now to the examples. I think it'll make it clearer. Let's get back to the example. What happened with Pinchas? Pinchas was an individual when he saw a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman sinning. It inflamed him to the extent that he actually killed him. So now one second, before we give him any rewards. Before we give him any rewards, the Torah says, very nice, thank you very much, Shekirch, you saved the Jewish people, wonderful. But before you get any personal rewards, what kind of person are you? If you are an inflamed, easily inflamed individual, an extremist, a kanoi in Hebrew, a zealot, you know, a fiery firebrand who does everything like that, then it's not such a big deal. You always function that way, you follow. So good, you got it right once. You applied it once in the right context. But you know, you're going to lose what you gain. Because there are going to be other times when you're going to hurt people, you follow? Where you should be. And so then the Torah waits and waits and waits. And when it sees that there came a time in the Jewish people that civil war was brewing, and anybody with an inflamed, passionate personality would have called the people to arms and marched in and decimated and destroyed them, Pinchas arrived and he made peace. He was the one who restrained himself and he said, just hold on, let's analyze this. And he analyzed and calmed everybody down. Then the Torah says that this individual is an individual whose natural abilities to make peace and show self-control. So when he got himself up and killed people, it was a tremendous act of control of his own natural meters. You follow? We see that when... Are we together? We see. Had he just been one way all the time, it would have been good and he would have done right, but the Torah wouldn't have given him this incredible cosmic reward. But when we see that he had one characteristic and how strong it was, and then we see that when necessary he was able to act the other way, only a person who's total self-control and acts according to what's right, no matter whether it suits him or doesn't suit him. That we learn it, of course, the origin of this, of course, the Torah teaches that its origin is from Abraham, from Avraham Avinu, when he was required to sacrifice his son as the tenth incredible test that he was given. The reason the Torah says that it was a great act was because, not because he was able to sacrifice, that is bad enough, great enough, but because his middah was kindliness. He brought to the world the middah called chesed. The thing that he taught in the world was that you don't do this. The thing that he taught in the world is giving life and guarding life and not killing. So when he had to go through a thing that was extremely the opposite of his birth, that's why you notice that, if you want a beautiful proof of it, his son Isaac, Yitzchak, his test, he was bound on the altar. And he allowed himself to be bound. And he allowed his father to shackle him on the altar. Well, that's a tremendous test also. Why don't we call it his test? Why is it always regarded as the tenth wonderful test of Abraham, Why isn't it called the test for Yitzchak? It's treated as if it's for him, it is no problem. For the father to kill the son was a tremendous problem. But for the son to let himself be killed, that's nothing. You know what? It was nothing. Because Yitzchak, his middah, what he brought to the world, was intense self-control and discipline. That was in keeping with his personality. When you go through a test that brings out what your natural abilities are, that's not a test. It's a very small test. But when you have to go against what your natural abilities are, that's a tremendous test. And are we together? To sacrifice his life for Hashem, that's what he was in the world for. That's what he was here for. He gave his whole life to Hashem from the beginning. It was a very small problem for him. But for his father to have to take his son's life, the opposite of what he was. And that's where the Jewish people lived. Now if we go back to the example that we started with, we can see the application. What was the problem with the Jewish men? The problem with the Jewish men was when it came to giving, they didn't discern. When it came to giving, they gave. It was for Avodah Zarah, they gave. It was for the Mishkan, they gave. So Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes them for giving to the Mishkan, because you spoiled it. You gave to the Mishkan, you gave your jewelry, you gave all your possessions so generously that we had more than enough. That's wonderful. But unfortunately, we can't rely on you. When it comes to giving for something else, you'll give there also. You follow? You want people who work on yourself. You've got a natural ability to give for a cause. Yes, it's very nice there. But look where it'll lead you to. You follow? We can't admire that. And that's why he criticizes them. He brings in, when he criticizes them for giving to the eagle, the calf, the god, he brings in the criticism that we gave, they gave to the Mishkan also. Because it loses its value. It loses its beauty. There are people who can't discern. But the women, Jewish women, and of course you see from Pinchas, you see exactly that. That's where we learned it from, is that he was able to control himself in one thing or the other. The Jewish women, what happened? They didn't give to the eagle, but when it came to the Mishkan, they gave. They gave more than the men. When it came to giving for the Mishkan, when they had to give there, they gave more than the men. The men, it says, came in addition to the women. But when it came to the golden calf, they didn't give. In other words, you see, you might say, well, the Jewish women, you know, they're soft-hearted. You follow? They gave to the Mishkan. What's the big deal about giving to the Mishkan? No big deal, because they gave the golden calf also. But it's not so. You see that when it came, you follow. And you might have said the other way around. When they did the great act of withholding their jewelry when it came to the eagle, you might say, well, they love their jewelry. That's all. They wouldn't give. Not because they were great-hearted about it and wanted to go against their husband and they disapproved of the sin. They don't like their jewelry. They wanted to stay with the earring. And therefore, when it came to... That's why they didn't want to give. But you see, no, they were generous. You follow? You can test the one act against the other. When it came to the eagle, they withstood their husbands. It must have been a very difficult thing to do. Tremendously difficult thing. And yet the Torah says that despite the fact that they withstood that and they were so strong there, the reward was not given to them until it came to the Mishkan. And then we could see that it wasn't just that you're stingy with your possessions, that you're stingy where it's morally correct to do so, but when it comes to be generous, you're even more generous than the men. Can you feel how each event only shows up what it is in the light of the opposite? And you can't judge a person by... Some people are generally, just genuinely, they have a gentle kind of a personality. They like to help people, they like to do good for people. They'll just do anything for you. That's wonderful, I'm not knocking that. But if you want to know if this person has worked on themselves and achieved self-control, you must see it in the light of everything that they do. If you want to bring up a child that way, you have to see that the child's natural personality is being worked on and controlled where it has to be and allowed to come out where it has to be. If you judge a person, you want to know if this person has reached the level of having worked on himself. You can't see if it goes across the board one meter. That's a natural gift. That might be a natural problem, whichever one is given to. But the point is, if you see that the one is being tested out against the other, this person knows where to give and they know where to hold back, they know how to let this middah express itself, they know when to control it, that's a person who's functioning with seichel and they're putting self-control in where it has to be. Now the final question is, What's that got to do with Rosh Chodesh? So they say, they explain like this. The new month was the end of the building of the Mishkan. This is what happened to the Jewish women. When it came to the Egel, they didn't give. They stood strong and they refused to give. When it came to the Mishkan, they gave. But when they gave to the Mishkan, so genuinely, there was one amazing thing. The Jewish women were put to a tremendous test. What happened? They gave all their gold. They were left without their jewelry. They were left without, they gave it all to the Mishkan, all for Hashem. What happened? Even then it says they weren't given the reward. It was 7 or 8 days before Rosh Chodesh. And they'd given all their jewelry away. Right? And they had nothing left. And the Mishkan was being built. But Hashem tested them even further. He wanted to know what was their response when the Mishkan was built. Because on the first day when it was built and collapsed, he wanted to feel what's in their hearts. Were they secretly happy? Were they secretly happy that maybe they'd get their jewelry back now? That it wasn't working? No, they weren't. They voluntarily, they wished that it would be established. And again, the second day he tested them again. All their gold and all their finery was all going up in the Mishkan. They were going to lose it now forever. And it collapsed again. Was there a flicker of interest? Was there a flicker in any Jewish... That's what you have to do. And even if it means going against your own personality, it means doing things that are completely inconsistent with each other. Right, in terms of your own natural midas, one minute you might be functioning with unbounded ecstasy, let's say, because you're happy and you're fitting into the groove that your personality takes you along. The next minute you have to be controlling yourself and gritting your teeth and doing a thing that's exactly against what your personality is, and you have to do that well. And it's that kind of self-control, that kind of intelligent building of the personality, building of a relationship, the way you function in a relationship, building of a child, as a child is brought out and evinces, shows, manifests his personality. As you encourage and teach a child, anyone around you, you teach that person to identify with his natural abilities, to first of all make an assessment of what it is that I'm good at, where am I sensitive, where do I function naturally, show that to its full beauty, and then show the person where that very characteristic will let you down. That very ability that you have, that special sensitivity in that area, that special power, that is going to be your destruction. And show the person how to discern between one application and another. That's the function of Jewish women. And Jewish women can make that distinction. They can teach the rest of the Jewish people, their children, husbands, everybody, how to make the distinction so that they use their tremendously strong emotions and strong personalities under the control of an intelligent guidance. That, in Yitzhak Hashem, could change the whole future of the world.